Good evening, afternoon, rather. It's 1320 hours Eastern Standard Time, December 19th, 2023 of the Common Era. Ward Green with you again. And maybe we'll get through today's reading in the time of 33 minutes. This chapter 2, paragraph 7 of Crucible of Credible Creed reads, "It is most notable that we don't require this king, namely Amenhotep," we were talking about him, "for the dating of the genealogy, since we can calculate a date for the Exodus by backwards reckoning or calculating from the kings of Israel, and yet this pharaoh provided a seemingly perfect reference date using absolute astronomical dating. The reason is because of the dates it gives his successor. No better way that we know of can align the Exodus in 1493 BCE with death of a pharaoh and account for many other details given in the Bible with such apparent ease. When Thutmose I, the successor to Amenhotep I, is taken as having ruled 13 years, according to Manetho, 12 years and 9 months, the reign of Amenhotep I can be obtained from the date of the Exodus without reliance upon astronomy. 1493 plus 13 equals 1506 BCE, end of the reign of Amenhotep I. 1506 plus 21 minus 1 equals 1526 BCE, start of the reign of Amenhotep I, and 1526 through 1506, the reign of Amenhotep I, which Manetho gave as 20 years, 7 months for the reign of Amenhotep I. In the iron furnace, we adjust these dates a little." Iron furnace is something we have in this article, The Crucible, "based on the belief that the Egyptian pharaohs carried out many of their ceremonial obligations, installing a pharaoh being the most significant one, perhaps, though erection of monuments, enacting of new law are also prime examples, in close conjunction with the start of a new moon. Pharaoh Amenhotep I rules from 1525 and Thutmose I from 1504. The accession of Amenhotep taken from Helk as 1 Akhet 29, or Thoth 29, and that of Thutmose dated as quote-unquote certain 3 Parrot 21. The lunar alignment of the accession dates for Amenhotep I and Thutmose I gives the latter's reign as about 11 years. And since years 8 and 9 are the highest attested years for Pharaoh Thutmose I, we prefer the lunar aligned dating, as it would also appear to agree with the well-nigh statement by Mr. Rolf Krauss and Mr. David Allen Warburton regarding a reign of 11 years for Thutmose I, based on the archaeology. Really, the 12 years and 9 months of Manetho is secondary when the Sothic alignment of Pharaoh Amenhotep's year 9 as 1517 yields 1525 as year 1, and 21 years later yields 1504 for Pharaoh Thutmose I, 11 years before the Exodus. Manetho's number may indicate a co-regency, as scholars do suggest, based on an inscription on a bark used as fill. Bark is a type of boat, and the co-regency would be Thutmose I together with Amenhotep toward the end of the reign of the pharaoh Amenhotep, as presented in chapter 9, paragraph 11, which we haven't come to yet. The lunar aligned reigns give Pharaoh Amenhotep I as ruling from October 6, 1525 to March 22, 1504, reign of 20 years, 5 months, and 16 days. The 20 years, 5 months, and 16 days compare how favorably with the 20 years and 7 months of Benito by Josephus, the 24 years of Benito by Africanus, or 21 years by Eusebius. And the 24 years, of course, of Africanus have been corrected because the total did not add up in that case for that dynasty as given by Africanus. So that number, 24, was corrected to 21. Anyway, we are now finished today's study here in the Crucible article. And we must move along. Little children, Proverbs 29 and 19 is today's proverb. A servant will not let himself be corrected by mere words, for he understands, but he is paying no heed. 2 Samuel 18. And David proceeded to number the people that were with him and to place over them chiefs of thousands and chiefs of hundreds. Further, David sent 1/3 of the people under the hand of Joab, and 1/3 under the hand of Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, Joab's brother, and 1/3 under the hand of Ittai the Gittite. Then the king said to the people, I myself also shall without fail go with you. But the people said, you must not go out, for if we should at all flee, they would not set heart upon us, and if half of us would die, they would not set heart upon us, because you are worth 10,000 of us. And now it would be better if you would be of service to us to give help from the city. So the king said to them, whatever seems good in your eyes, I shall do. And the king kept standing at the side of the gate, and all the people themselves went out by hundreds and by thousands. And the king went on to command Joab and Abishai and Ittai, saying, deal gently for my sake with the young man Absalom. And all the people themselves heard when the king commanded all the chiefs over the matter of Absalom. And the people continued on their way out to the field to meet Israel, and the battle came to be in the forest of Ephraim. Finally, the people of Israel were defeated there before the servants of David, and the slaughter there turned out to be great on that day of 20,000 men, and the battle there got to be spread out over all the land that was in sight. Furthermore, the forest did more in eating up the people than the sword did in eating them up on that day. Eventually, Absalom found himself before the servants of David, and Absalom was riding upon a mule, and the mule got to come under the network of boughs of a massive big tree, so that his head got caught fast in the big tree, and he was taken up between the heavens and the earth, as the mule itself that was under him passed along. Then a certain man saw it and told Joab and said, look, I've seen Absalom hung in a big tree. At this Joab said to the man who was telling him, and here you saw it, and why did you not strike him down to the earth there? Then it would have been my obligation to give you 10 pieces of silver and a belt. But the man said to Joab, and although I were weighing upon my palms 1,000 pieces of silver, I should not thrust my hand out against the king's son. For in our hearing it was that the king commanded you and Abishai and Ittai, saying, watch out, whoever you are, over the young man, over Absalom. Otherwise, I should have dealt treacherously against his soul, and the whole matter itself would not be hidden from the king, and you yourself would take a position off on the side. To this Joab said, let me not hold myself up for this way before you. With that he took 3 shafts in his palm and proceeded to drive them through the heart of Absalom while he was yet alive in the heart of the big tree. Then 10 attendants carrying Joab's weapons came around and struck Absalom that they might put him to death. And Joab now blew the horn that the people might return from chasing after Israel. For Joab had held back the people. Finally, they took Absalom and pitched him in the forest into a big hollow and raised up over him a very big pile of stones. As for all Israel, they fled, each man to his home. Now Absalom himself, while he was alive, had taken and proceeded to raise up for himself a pillar, which is in the low plain of the king, for he said, I have no son, in order to keep my name in remembrance. So he called the pillar by his own name, and it continues to be called Absalom's monument down to this day. Now, as regards Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, he said, let me run, please, and break the news to the king, because Jehovah has judged him to free him from the hand of his enemies. But Joab said to him, You are not a man of news this day, and you must break the news on another day, but this day you must not break the news for the very reason that the king's own son has died. Then Joab said to the Cushite, Go, tell the king what you have seen. At that the Cushite bowed to Joab and began to run. Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok, now said once again to Joab, Let now happen whatever will, let me also myself, please, run behind the Cushite. However, Joab said, Why is it that you yourself have to run, my son, when there's no news being found for you? Still he said, Let now happen whatever will, let me run. So he said to him, Run! And Ahimaaz began to run by the way of the district, and he eventually passed by the Cushite. Now David was sitting between the two gates. Meantime, the watchman went to the roof of the gate by the wall. At length he raised his eyes and saw, and looked, there was a man running by himself. So the watchman called and told the king, at which the king said, If he's by himself, there's news in his mouth. And he kept coming, steadily getting nearer. The watchman now saw another man running. The watchman therefore called to the gatekeeper and said, Look, another man running by himself. At which the king said, This one also is a news bearer. And the watchman went on to say, I'm seeing that the running style of the first is like the running style of Ahimaaz, the son of Zadok. At which the king said, This is a good man, and with good news he should come. Eventually Ahimaaz called and said to the king, It is well. With that he bowed to the king with his face to the earth, and he went on to say, Blessed be Jehovah your God, who has surrendered the men that lifted up their hand against my lord the king. However, the king said, Is it well with the young man Absalom? To this Ahimaaz said, I saw the great commotion at the time Joab sent the king's servant and your servant, and I did not know what it was. So the king said, Step aside, take your position here. At that he stepped aside and kept standing still, and here was the Cushite coming in. And the Cushite began to say, Let my lord the king accept news, for Jehovah has judged you today to free you from the hand of all those rising up against you. But the king said to the Cushite, Is it well with the young man Absalom? To this the Cushite said, May the enemies of my lord the king and all those who rose up against you for evil become as the young man. Then the king became disturbed and went up to the roof chamber over the gateway and gave way to weeping. And this is what he said as he walked. My son, Absalom, oh, that I might have died, I myself, instead of you. Absalom, my son. 2 Samuel 18 is concluded. And we now may read Lamentations chapter 1, which is a book written by Jeremiah. And it was evidently written after the destruction of Jerusalem. And here's how it goes. Lamentations chapter 1. Oh, how she has come to sit solitary, the city that was abundant with people. How she has become like a widow, she that was populous among the nations. How she that was a princess among the jurisdictional districts has come to be for forced labor. Profusely she weeps during the night, and her tears are upon her cheeks. She has no one to comfort her from all her lovers. All her very own companions have dealt treacherously with her. They have become enemies to her. Judah has gone into exile because of the affliction and because of the abundance of servitude. She herself has had to dwell among the nations. No resting place has she found. All those who were persecuting her have overtaken her among distressing circumstances. The ways of Zion are mourning because there are none coming to the festival. All her gates are laid desolate. Her priests are sighing. Her virgins are grief-stricken, and she herself has bitterness. Her adversaries have become the head. Those who are her enemies are unconcerned. Because Jehovah himself has brought grief to her on account of the abundance of her transgressions, her own children have walked captive before the adversary. And from the daughter of Zion there goes out all her splendor. Her princes have proved to be like stags that have found no pasturage, and they keep walking without power before the pursuer. Jerusalem has remembered in the days of her affliction and of her homeless people all her desirable things that happened to be from days of long ago, when her people fell into the hand of the adversary and she had no helper. The adversary saw her. They laughed over her collapse. Jerusalem has committed outright sin. That is why she has become a mere abhorrent thing. All who were honoring her have treated her as something cheap, for they have seen her nakedness. She herself is also sighing and turns back. Her uncleanness is in her skirts. She did not remember the future for her, and down she goes in a wondrous manner. No comforter does she have. O Jehovah, see my affliction, for the enemy has put on great airs. The adversary has spread out his own hand against all her desirable things. For she has seen nations that have come into her sanctuary, whom you commanded that they should not come into the congregation belonging to you. All her people are sighing, they are looking for bread. They've given their desirable things for something to eat in order to refresh the soul. See, O Jehovah, and do look, for I have become as a valueless woman. Is it nothing to all you who are passing along the way? Look and see. Does there exist any pain like my pain that has been severely dealt out to me, with which Jehovah has caused grief in the day of his burning anger? From the height he has sent fire into my bones, and he subdues each one. He has spread out a net for my feet. He has turned me backward. He has made me a woman, lay desolate. All the day I am ill. He has kept himself alert against my transgressions. In his hand they intertwine one another. They have come up upon my neck. My power has stumbled. Jehovah has given me into the hand of those against whom I am unable to rise up. All my powerful ones Jehovah has tossed aside from the midst of me. He has called against me a meeting in order to break my young men to pieces. Jehovah has trodden the very winepress belonging to the virgin daughter of Judah. Over these things I am weeping as a woman. My eye is running down with waters, for a comforter has become far away from me, someone to refresh my soul. My sons have become those laid desolate, for the enemy has put on great airs. Zion has spread out her hands. No comforter does she have. Jehovah has given a command concerning Jacob to all who are around him as his adversaries. Jerusalem has become an abhorrent thing in among them. Jehovah is righteous, for it is against his mouth that I have rebelled. Listen now, all you peoples, and see my pain. My own virgins and my own young men have gone into captivity. I have called to those intensely loving me. They themselves have tricked me. In the city, my own priests and my own old men have expired, while they had to look for something to eat for themselves, that they might refresh their soul. See, O Jehovah, for I am in sore straits. My intestines are in a ferment. My heart has been overturned in the midst of me, for I have been absolutely rebellious. Outside, the sword caused bereavement of children. Within the house, it is the same as death. People have heard how I myself am sighing as a woman. There is no comforter for me. All my enemies themselves have heard of my calamity. They have exulted because you yourself have done it. You will certainly bring the day that you have proclaimed, that they may become like me. May all their badness come before you and deal severely with them, just as you have dealt severely with me on account of all my transgressions. For my sighs are many, and my heart is ill. That's the end of Lamentations chapter 1. It's longer than it seems, because each verse is quite lengthy compared to some other texts of the Bible. Matthew 27, when it had become morning, all the chief priests, see, now this would be the day of the Passover, all the chief priests, this is not the day of the Passover, this is the day of the Essene Passover, right? It's still, they hadn't yet killed Jesus, and they wouldn't have been able to do that if Jesus, if it had happened on the day of the first day of Passover, it would have been illegal for them to execute a man. When it had become morning, all the chief priests and the older men of the people held a consultation against Jesus so as to put him to death. So this is still the day of preparation for the Sadducees, but it's the Passover day of the Essenes. And after binding him, they led him off and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. Then Judas, who betrayed him, seeing he had been condemned, felt remorse and turned the 30 silver pieces back to the chief priests and older men, saying, I sinned when I betrayed righteous blood. They said, what is that to us? You must see to that. So he threw the silver pieces into the temple and withdrew and went off and hanged himself. But the chief priests took the silver pieces and said, it is not lawful to drop them into the sacred treasury because they are the price of blood. After consulting together, they bought with them the potter's field to bury strangers. Therefore, that field has been called Field of Blood to this very day. Then what was spoken through Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled, saying, and they took the 30 silver pieces, the price upon the man that was priced, the one on whom some of the sons of Israel set a price, and they gave them for the potter's field, according to what Jehovah had commanded me. Jesus now stood before the governor, and the governor put the question to him, are you the king of the Jews? Jesus replied, you yourself say it. But while he was being accused by the chief priests and older men, he made no answer. Then Pilate said to him, do you not hear how many things they are testifying against you? Yet he did not answer him. No, not a word. So that the governor wondered very much. Now, from festival to festival, it was the custom of the governor to release a prisoner to the crowd, the one they wanted. Just at that time, they were holding a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. Hence, when they were gathered together, Pilate said to them, which one do you want me to release to you, Barabbas or Jesus, the so-called Christ? For he was aware that out of envy they had handed him over. Moreover, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife sent out to him, saying, have nothing to do with that righteous man, for I suffered a lot today in a dream because of him. But the chief priests and older men persuaded the crowds to ask for Barabbas, but to have Jesus destroyed. Now, in responding, the governor said to them, which of the two do you want me to release to you? They said, Barabbas. Pilate said to them, what then shall I do with Jesus, the so-called Christ? They all said, let him be impaled. He said, why? What bad thing did he do? Still, they kept crying out all the more, let him be impaled. Seeing that it did no good, but rather an uproar was arising, Pilate took water and washed his hands before the crowd, saying, I am innocent of the blood of this man. You yourselves must see to it. At that, all the people said in answer, his blood come upon us and upon our children. Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus whipped and handed him over to be impaled. Then the soldiers of the governor took Jesus into the governor's palace and gathered the whole body of troops together to him, and disrobing him, they draped him with a scarlet cloak, and they braided a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and a reed in his right hand. And kneeling before him, they made fun of him, saying, good day, you king of the Jews. And they spit upon him and took the reed and began hitting him upon the head. Finally, when they had made fun of him, they took the cloak off and put his outer garments upon him and led him off for impaling. As they were going out, they found a native of Cyrene named Simon. This man they impressed into service to lift up his torture stake. And when they came to a place called Golgotha, that is to say, Skull Place, they gave him wine mixed with gall to drink, but after tasting it, he refused to drink. When they had impaled him, they distributed his outer garments by casting lots, and as they sat, they watched over him there. Also, they posted above his head the charge against him, saying, in writing, this is Jesus, the King of the Jews. Then two robbers were impaled with him, one on his right and one on his left. So the passers-by began speaking abusively of him, wagging their heads and saying, oh, you would-be thrower down of the temple and builder of it in 3 days, save yourself, if you are a son of God. Come down off the torture stake. In like manner, also the chief priests with the scribes and older men began making fun of him and saying, others he saved, himself he cannot save. He is the king of Israel. Let him now come down off the torture stake, and we will believe on him. He has put his trust in God. Let him now rescue him, if he wants him, for he said, I am God's son. In the same way, even the robbers that were impaled together with him began reproaching him. From the sixth hour on, a darkness fell over all the land until the ninth hour. That would be from 12 to 3 in the afternoon. Or, you know, what do we call that? 1512 to 1500 hours military time. About the ninth hour, Jesus called out with a loud voice saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani, or sabachthani. That is, my God, why have you forsaken me? And hearing this, some of those standing there began to say, "This man is calling Elijah." And immediately one of them ran and took a sponge and soaked it with sour wine and put it on a reed and went giving him a drink. But the rest of them said, "Let him be. Let us see whether Elijah comes to save him." Another man took a spear and pierced his side, and blood and water came out. Again, Jesus cried out with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. This blood and water that came out is the blood and water that went down through the crack in the rock and ended up on the mercy seat of the Ark of the Covenant that Ron Wyatt then later discovered and had analyzed and found it to be living after thousands of years. Again, Jesus cried out with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. And look, the curtain of the sanctuary was rent in two from top to bottom, and the earth quaked, and the rock masses were split. So that may have been when they were split in such a way that there was a way, an opening that was made for the blood and water to flow down onto the mercy seat. Very interesting, very prophetically, because the blood had to be put on the Ark of the Covenant in order to atone for sin. And the memorial tombs were opened, and many bodies of the holy ones that had fallen asleep were raised up, and persons coming out from among the memorial tombs after his being raised up entered into the holy city, and they became visible to many people. But the army officer and those with him watching over Jesus, when they saw the earthquake and the things happening, grew very much afraid, saying, "Certainly this was God's son." All these events with the earthquake, the dead bodies being raised up from the memorial tombs. Moreover, many women were there viewing from a distance who had accompanied Jesus from Galilee to minister to him, among whom was Mary Magdalene, also Mary the mother of James and Joses. That would be James and John, I would think, wouldn't it be? James and Joseph, it says there, okay. And the mother of the sons of Zebedee. That would be the mother of James and John, the mother of the sons of Zebedee. Now, as it was late in the afternoon, there came a rich man of Arimathea named Joseph, who had also himself become a disciple of Jesus. This man went up to Pilate and asked for the body of Jesus. Then Pilate commanded it to be given over. This is the day of the Essene Passover, and the day before the Sadducee Passover, 2 days before the Pharisee Passover. And Joseph took the body, wrapped it up in clean, fine linen, and laid it in his new memorial tomb, which they couldn't have done on the first day of Passover, because that would be laborious work, which he had quarried in the rock mass. And after rolling a big stone to the door of the memorial tomb, he left. But Mary Magdalene and the other Mary continued there, sitting before the grave. The next day, which was after the preparation, right, the next day would have been the first day of the unfermented cakes for the Sadducees. And it would have been the first day, in other words, of Passover, of the Passover festival. The chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together. But, of course, it was the day after the Essene Passover, day one. It was the day after the beginning of the Essene Passover, or the day of the first day of the Essene. Day after the, it was the second day of the Essene Passover, let's put it that way. In the year 30 CE, the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered together before Pilate, saying, "Sir, we have called to mind that that impostor said while alive, 'After 3 days I am to be raised up.' Therefore, command the grave to be made secure until the third day, that his disciples may never come and steal him and say to the people, 'He was raised up from the dead.' And this last imposture will be worse than the first." So they even were afraid that he would be stolen by his disciples. And so they made sure that they prevented that from happening. Pilate said to them, "You have a guard. Go make it as secure as you know how." So they went and made the grave secure by sealing the stone and having the guard. That's the end of the reading of Matthew 27. That's the end of our scriptural study for today. We can see how consistent this is, in fact, with our article Born and Raised and the year 30 CE, as the date of crucifixion is absolutely rock solid here, according to the testimony of the gospel itself in the reading for today, and certainly we will be looking at the other Gospels as well, of course. But this is just about 3 minutes before the end of our video for today, so we have a little bit of time. The remarkable thing about the, perhaps I should talk about the article again, the Crucible article, a little bit, or, you know, as the Holy Spirit perhaps moves me in some way. What's this? Yeah, this is it. So, I mean, as we learned more, this Crucible article was not the end. It was more like the beginning of our study of the Egyptian pharaohs. And so we had articles that came later that refined that quite a bit. The Trojan War was an article that came after this one that refined it to quite a significant extent. I think Trojan War was number 14, is that right? Or was it 13? I'm trying to remember. 14 or 13. And, well, the way to find out is to look here. Which one is this? Is this Born and Raised? Yeah, this is Born and Raised. So, Trojan War did a lot of refining of this. And it came, yeah, it was number 13. That's right. And then Wild Robe was 14. So, and we haven't, we've studied Wild Robe. We haven't studied Trojan War. But you're not yet. But it does an incredible refining of the Egyptian dates. But then the Uncut Tut, of course, will talk about Egypt as well. And True is another refining of the Egyptian dates, if I'm recalling correctly. So as we've gone on, we've been able to refine the dates. But Trojan War was remarkable at almost finalizing the Egyptian pharaoh's dates and so on. The thing is, the dating of Tut is somewhat, perhaps, what's the word, debatable maybe, or unfinalized maybe. Not sure if that's the right way to put it. But it looks like the correct date for Tut year one is 1357, according to the lunar alignments, but, you know, a three-year shift is a one-day change in the lunar alignment, and that can only be in one direction because the other direction would make it the wrong time of the month. According to the Egyptian religion, they didn't like the end of the month. They liked the beginning of the month in their religion. So, so it may be clear that we're within 3 years for the date of Tut's year one, but that's part of Dynasty 18, which is the same dynasty about which we've been speaking here. In the reign of, with regard to the reign of Amos and then Amenhotep the first and Thutmose the first, they were the beginning of Dynasty 18 of Egypt. Now we're done our study. It's time to conclude the video, December 19th, 2023 of the Common Era, and the time is 1353 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you. This is Gully, and this is Cassie. Two of my watches, and they're saying on my behalf, bye for now.